The themes and the content discussed in this programme may be of an adult nature. It is not suitable for younger ears.
Live and local.
After the Watershed.
Do not mention the duck. You're obsessed with that duck.
Why did you put the duck in?
It's not a duck.
That is a new duck.
It's a very effective sound effect.
It's
no expense spared.
But what is it supposed to convey?
I have no idea. Okay. But anyway, we're not here to talk about ducks.
What are we here to talk about?
Oh, I'm so tempted. but I won't. We are going to talk about feminist sex. We're going to find out basically whether or not we are having feminist sex, and in order to do that,
you have to
probably
have sex.
Well, there's that. We probably also need to clarify what feminist sex is.
Yeah, should I tell you what I think it is?
Go.
Well, I know what it is because I've interviewed.
Right. You are up.
One of
in
our
this
guests.
Area.
One of our guests that we'll be talking to in a minute. I've chatted to before. So she describes. So Flo Perry is a writer and illustrator, and she's written a great book called "How to Have Feminist Sex: A Fairly Graphic Guide." And she describes feminist sex as all about having sex you want to have rather than the sex you feel you should be having.
Okay. Well, I've come up with a little test that we can all do together. Get
you
pens and paper
knock.
At the ready.
It's blue ink. Is that okay?
That's fine. We can all find out together through this simple test whether or not we are having feminist sex.
Live and local.
After the Watershed.
So, are you ready? I feel like I'm at school. I feel like I'm the teacher.
I'm not calling you miss if that's where
no,
you're going.
No. So, the key to feminist sex is... number one, communicating what you want. So how comfortable do you feel with saying, actually, that's not working for me?
Does saying it on a radio show count?
No, you actually have to say it in the bedroom to the person you're having sex with. But, you know, nearly half a point.
Half a point to BB.
Half a point. Now, should also point out...
Oh, hang on. Give me your scores as well? Or are you keeping that to yourself?
I'll keep that to myself.
Okay.
I'm that kid at school. I've got my
textbooks
around me like a
wall. We know exactly what child you are at school.
It's important, though, not to be rude when you communicate. Unless you're going to struggle with this bit. You mustn't be rude. And it doesn't mean prioritising your own sexual pleasure above your partner's. Because that swings the pendulum a bit too far the other way. So you've gone past equality there. You're into selfishness at that point. But it is about having an honest conversation about your sexual wants and needs.
So that's one. That's
yes. In fact, that is apparently the most feminist thing you can do with your sex life.
Yeah.
It says here, if you're validating your own preferences, expressing your desires and having them truly heard, you will be fully empowered. And that is the central focus of feminism.
How brilliant.
So leading on from that, how to learn to speak your mind in bed. Because all very well saying that this is what you've got to do. But, we've discussed this before. It can be tricky,
it's so difficult. And because you don't want to hurt anyone's feelings. I've heard people say, don't say this stuff in the bedroom because it's in the murder scene, the crime scene almost. But you know what I mean? Didn't we conclude that the best way is to mime?
Mime. We said charades is always the way forward. If in doubt, mime it out. There's a book there. I think we've had lots of experts on the show, and I think the general consensus, like you were saying, seems to be don't actually have that conversation in the moment because it's a bit
raw.
Close to home, a bit raw. But at some point when you feel that,
darling,
what point would that be? Over breakfast?
Well, I know you want to say Waitrose because you seem to be obsessed.
You see lots of couples having furtive conversations in that coffee shop in Waitrose. Now we know what they're discussing.
There's genuine... So you're not kidding about a coffee shop being in Waitrose?
I can't believe you've never been to the coffee
shop
in Waitrose.
Why would I go to a coffee shop in Waitrose?
Get, like, free coffee.
What?
Yeah, now she's interested.
What? So two is... How to have the conversation. So how are we telling us to do that?
Well, it says here that sexual expression can be particularly difficult for women.
Yeah.
And feminists believe that that is because of the patriarchal forces at work in our society that have perhaps conditioned us to think that our desires are less important than our male partners. And I think there is a little bit of that. Feeling that, you're there to please the man.
And also...
And you've got to flip that on its head.
So hang on, so how does that work when it's a lesbian relationship?
It's an interesting... I have no idea.
Okay.
Well, I suppose both of you... Well, I suppose...
Nothing would ever get...
The thing that's tricky, whenever you talk about feminism, in whatever context, be it feminist, sex or whatever, it's important to make the point that, you know, this isn't about saying women are better than men. It's not saying, oh, we're going to go so far the other way now that female pleasure is more important than male pleasure. This is just all about equality. So in a lesbian relationship, again, it's the same, I guess. It's about...
Oh, I totally get that. I'm just saying, how would the conversation be approached? And if you're both in that patriarchal take of that you have to be the nurturer and you have to be the one that's compassionate and your needs are less, well, that's two people saying their needs are less.
Yeah, yes. A study in 2012. I like
Hang
to
on, what
the
point did you get
bit.
For that? Have you scored it?
I've given up on scoring. A study from 2012 proved that if you are talking about sex a lot, expressing what you like, what you want, how you're feeling, then the better the sex you are likely to have. And interestingly, non-verbal communication... So putting somebody's hand in the right place.
Oh, don't. I've got a story. I can't even tell
instance,
you that story. Okay.
Or, it says, or moving them into a new position was rated as a massive satisfaction booster as well. So actually, we weren't far off with the mime. You don't actually have to be chatting about this
There's
stuff.
No way we were right. Come
Actions
on.
Actions sometimes speak louder than words. We want to hear your story about moving the hand into the right place. Can we?
I don't think we can.
Oh, really?
I'll tell you when there's...
Can't you just change the names?
I wasn't going to give a name. I'll have a think. We'll have a sip of tea and then decide.
It's also important, it says here, to remember that you don't necessarily have to be the one supplying the ideas all of the time in order to be having feminist sex, which is just as well, because that sounds quite tiring. Exhausting.
So you're... But then isn't that a little bit counterproductive? So you're positing the notion that the sex isn't great and then going... Up to you to sort it.
We're looking for solutions here, not problems.
Oh, I'm sorry.
Guess who's been on the management course?
I don't think we should underestimate the power of the post-it.
Do you think? You think that's the way forward? Just a little post-it note
just
on the wardrobe.
Slap them on their forehead, on the pillow.
What happens, though, if you want to be dominated? What if you want somebody else to tell you what to do?
Yeah.
Because as we know from recent shows, that is something that, you know, does it for a lot of people. If you are a feminist, does that...
But you could still have that. Feminism isn't being overpowering. Feminism is saying, I want what I want. And if I want to be submissive...
Yeah, I guess.
I'm in my power by saying that's what I want.
Yeah, so if I want to be out of control...
Yeah.
If I've chosen it, then that's okay. I'm still empowered.
Yeah. Again, with all of this, but Flo makes a really great point in her book as well about men having feminist sex, because the patriarchy maybe suppresses women a lot, but it also impacts on men as well. It makes them think if they're not being macho enough, if they're not big enough, if they're not powerful enough, if they want to be a sub in that power situation, that's deemed less manly, isn't it?
Well, we can talk to Flo Perry now, who has written a book all about this. In fact, it's called How to Have Feminist Sex. I'm intrigued by the kind of subtitle, a fairly graphic guide. I mean, how graphic are we talking, Flo?
Hi. It's illustrated, so that's how graphic that we are talking. It's I filled it with lots of drawings, but not too graphic. That's why it's just fairly graphic.
Flo says one of her skills is drawing boobs. And you're right, Flo.
It's a good skill to have.
It's a great, great skill.
I worked on it for many years.
Why did you write the book?
I just thought that feminism is very trendy these days. Lots of people talk about it. And there's a lot of chat about how sex is a source of trauma for women in the media. When we're talking about feminist sex, we're usually talking about how to say no, and we don't talk about how to say yes and about the joy of sex, basically, and how much fun sex can be for women and how you can maximise that fun.
Alison totally wrote that down when you said that, because that's absolutely brilliant, isn't it?
It is. And am I right in saying that I actually read somewhere that you wanted to send, or I don't know if you did actually send a copy of your book to some of the contestants in Love Island because you wanted because you wanted them to read that
message?
Well, because it's interesting. Like when I mean, obviously, I've never watched the program. It's not my cup of tea. But on the odd occasion, I may have come across it. It was quite interesting in this idea of the men felt very comfortable in talking about their sexual history. And in fact, some of the girls in this series did, but there was still that stigma. And I think there is still a bit of a stigma. You know, men will quite happily say their number of past relationships. Whereas if a woman has been with a lot of partners, people sort of turn their nose and go, oh, well, that says a lot of, you know, there is still that complete double standard at work.
Totally, yeah. I was really shocked when I watched Love Island, and they always have a segment where they like talk about how many people they slept with. And I was really shocked at how like the women feel so judged. But then like that it's like such a big area of controversy for them that it's like still a big thing, even like if they've slept with like 25 people, they're like, oh, don't judge me. And it's like, oh my God.
Whereas the boys on there are like, 150 girls in one night. And everyone's like, yes, son, go on.
High five, exactly.
Yeah.
I just don't think there's enough talk in our media. There's no narrative of like the happy slag. That's really something I want to push for. I think every time a woman has like slept with a lot of people, people assume it's because she's unhappy in some way, or she hasn't found what she's looking for,
or been traumatized. Or this is so interesting. So the whole premise of the book is to challenge the myths, isn't it? That porn and the media and our parents spread about sex. What kind of myths are you talking about? So this, the happy slag, the number, size. I guess, you know, if you're bigger, you're going to be unhappy.
Yeah, I think that's a big one. Like you know, I think lots of women have this kind of fantasy version of themselves with their perfect body in their head. And they think, once I get to that, then I'll be happy. And that's not a good way to think. I want to encourage women to accept themselves where they are and think, actually, if I got thinner, I might not be any happier. I don't know that. Like, this might be the thinnest I ever get, and it might be the happiest, and I can be the happiest I can ever be in this size. And other things, I think that people put too much moral weight on like how we lose our virginity. That's a big one for younger people. I think that not enough weight is put on losing our virginity being a physically pleasurable experience, and too much weight is put on it being like morally good or something we don't regret the rest of our lives somehow.
Do you think we just put too much weight on sex, full stop? I mean, there was a great thing I read where you said, you know, you go out and have a bad meal, it's not the end of the world, is it? You just kind of go, oh yeah, I've had better Chinese's. Do you know what I mean? But then if you have like...
It would ruin my weekend, but sure.
But it's not that, you know, you're going to get a better chow mein next week. But with sex, if it hasn't lived up to this ideal that we have in our heads, it feels like a bigger blow.
Yeah, I think so. Obviously, this is like a person. I don't want to minimize anyone's feelings if they feel like they had a bad sexual encounter and that was a big deal for them. I don't want to minimize that. But I do want to say it doesn't have to be a big deal. It's not like sex is a limited resource in a woman's life. You can have as much of it as you want with as many people as you want. If some of it is bad quality for whatever reason, that doesn't need, you know, don't need to worry about it because you can just have more.
It is interesting though, Flo, because I think I agree with you. I never really thought about this, but sex for women isn't really talked about in terms of pleasure and us wanting it or liking it. It's as a response to something.
Totally.
And invariably something negative.
It's kind of talked about as like a duty or something we have to go through more often than a great joy of life.
One of Flo's in the book, there's huge sections about consent, which is going to be a huge feminist, you know, take on it. And Flo gives perfect tips, or the tips to have the perfect one night stand.
Oh yeah,
yeah. Isn't one, what was the big one that you told me, Flo?
Are you talking about the one where it's like, get very precise instructions if you're going to the loo in the dark in the middle of the night?
And tell Alison why.
Oh, no.
Because once I might have turned the light on in a room that I was pretty sure was going to be a bathroom, and it turned out to be their little brother's room.
Oh! Oh.
And he just went, 5 more minutes, Mum.
Oh! It gets worse.
Yeah.
He was like, turn the light off, back very slowly out. It's going to be a long 5 minutes.
Wow.
Turns the light on again. He's going to think that was some crazy dream.
What does feminist sex mean to you?
To me, it just means having the sex that you want to have, whatever that looks like, free of expectations about what sex should look like. I think we get a lot of messages about what our sex life should look like, and we don't think enough about what we want our sex life to look like.
Do you think a lot of it's shaped by our upbringing?
Yeah, I think just the surrounding culture that we all grow up in has a huge effect on the whole of our lives, I think.
Yeah. I just wonder, you probably know what I'm getting at. Obviously, you know, your mum is the psychotherapist, Philippa, Grace, and your father is the transvestite artist, Grayson Perry. Like, obviously, two people who I imagine were brilliant to talk to about this kind of stuff. Mm. Whereas if people come from a background where parents are perhaps more, what's the word?
Hemmed
in. Head in the sand
is a specific position. Yeah. If you check out chapter 6 in this book.
I mean, do you think that's had quite an impact on you? Were these conversations you were having kind of growing up? Or
sex wasn't a source of shame in the house, definitely. But it's very hard to compare your own growing, like, upbringing to anyone else's.
Because you've known anyone
experiences one, exactly. But yeah, I think that if people are like struggling and don't know how to have these conversations with their children, I think the important thing is just to, if they do ask you questions, don't like imply a sense of shame on that. Don't think it's something that has to be this big hush secret. It can just, you know, obviously it's a private matter, but it doesn't have to be surrounded in shame or nervous energy, basically.
I think a big thing is saying having the sex that you want. How do you know what sex you want is? Because when do you ever really examine that?
Yeah, I think that's something that women don't put enough analytical thought into.
I guess you have to try it out. I mean, it's a bit like, I hate to go back to Waitrose, but if you're not sure what wine you want on a Friday night, sometimes they do tastings. I'm just thinking maybe this is the way forward.
Flo, did you know that there's a coffee shop in Waitrose? I'm appalled by this.
I'm serious though. I guess that's how you find out what you want, is by trying lots of different things.
And analysing.
Really, yeah, I really recommend, I'm a huge fan of masturbation generally, but really think about what you masturbate about. Everyone has like a flash of images or scenarios, or, you know, some people have whole plot lines that they think about when they are having this time for themselves. And not many people, or not enough people anyway, really think about what that means and how to recreate those kind of feelings that they're thinking about when they masturbate in their sex life.
I've thought of a new job for you. You know, you get those dream analysts, baby.
Yeah.
You could be a masturbation analyst.
What do you mean, new job? That's how I've paid the gas bill for the last 3 years.
This could be a whole thing. You tell BB what you think about your masturbate, and you can analyse.
And if you're not saying BB, she'll put the phone down on you. How do you tell people? So Ali was saying, Ali did a really terrible quiz on me earlier because we got to, she stopped keeping count, and there was no evident prize. So you masturbate, you're thinking about what it is that's doing it for you, and you're like, okay, that's kind of what I want to now bring into my sex life. How do you have that conversation?
It's scary. And I think that I'm very practiced at this now, but like, even I still find like talking about sex with the person you're having with can be like nerve-wracking experience. But you just got to get over it. You've just got to feel that fear and that nervous energy and do it anyway, however hard you find it. You know, write it down, turn the other way, in separate rooms on Skype if you find it easier. Like, and once you start having that conversation, then it becomes much, much easier. And then eventually it'll just become part of everyday life.
See, my feeling is I'd be okay having the conversation and saying what I want if someone came back and said, well, while we're at it,
yeah, that's
it. This is what you've been doing.
Yeah, it's easier to kind of give that feedback, but to receive is always trickier. No. And one of the things you do recommend in the book, Flo, is taking pictures of yourself.
Yeah,
I'm a
naked and sending them. I mean, that fills me with dread. There is no filter available that is going to make that okay for me. I don't think.
You never sent one?
No, I've never sent one. No. Have you?
Have you ever taken one just for you?
Yeah, good question.
No, I haven't. Maybe I should.
What
I
would be?
Even know where to begin.
I think you'd be surprised at what you see, and when you can like look at it in that kind of like detached way that you see it in a still photo. And I think that like I truly believe that like every naked body is beautiful, and I think that, you know, the person you're having sex with certainly thinks that your naked body is beautiful, and if you send like pictures to them, that the feeling of them being like, wow, you look so hot, oh my god, I'm so turned on, la 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 la, is such an amazing confidence boost. And it's also a really brilliant way of starting that like conversation about sex and talking about sex more, because then suddenly you're texting about, oh, I want to do this to you later, la 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 la, and I'm like, dirty talk is like consent. They are one and the same, basically. And I am just a huge fan of everyone.
Say that again. Dirty talk and consent are one and the same.
Basically, like, once you're, like, talking about, like, I want to do this to you, and then the other person's like, yeah, that's consent. But, you know, consent is a very boring and dry word, whereas, like, dirty talk sounds fun.
I struggle taking a selfie of my face, though. Like, I'm not kidding you. Like, how many? I mean, I've been known to take, you know, 30,
just to 40 get the right
pictures
one.
Before I find one I like. If it was of another part of my body, I could be there a long time.
But see,
time.
That's another thing, because, and as you rightly say, Flo, you need to, this has to be, you know, if you're going to send a picture out, it's hopefully to someone you trust, because often those pictures get leaked. You know, not leaked, leaks the wrong word. It sounds like, you know, you're standing for Parliament, you know what I mean?
Yeah.
But it's, but in that as well, in that context as well, women come off badly in that, because women are then slut shamed.
Yeah, I also think that that's a bit like, it's a kind of fear mongering narrative that, like, if you send a nude, it probably will get leaked. I have sent so many nudes, and like, not one of them has turned up on Twitter. I am still waiting.
You like, want your Kim Kardashian
now,
moment?
I'm on the radio.
Yeah, get my sex video out
come
there.
On, great
make
publicity.
Me a million. Yeah, I get that. No, I wouldn't worry about it being leaked maliciously as such. I would worry about, you know, nowadays where just your iPod can be connected to the iPad.
Yeah, that's so true.
My worry is that, you know, you're doing some sort of work presentation and then all of a sudden on the PowerPoint behind you, oh, wrong slide.
I've got a great one. So my Mac broke and I was at the Genius Bar.
Oh, no.
Oh, no. Oh no.
It wasn't, it was a picture that had been sent to me and it literally popped up.
Popped up.
Genius,
the operative
genius
word.
Darren. It made Genius Darren's day,
I'm
put it
sure.
that way.
You have from the Genius Bar.
No, I've got loyalty card.
BB's in. What joy have we got today? Brilliant.
Flo, how do you follow this book up?
Oh, I don't know. I'm having like an extended period of not much. That's my life at the moment.
That's my last 10 years. Does writing a book like this, how much does it make you reevaluate sex?
Oh, it was quite transformative to me. I mean, like I ended one relationship and began another
because of the book.
I think it was always going to happen, but. It's very strange thinking about sex all day, every day, like when that's your job. I think for me, I've learned that it's something that I actually love and I really enjoy, and it's okay to prioritize that in your life and really prioritize having great sex as something that makes you happy.
It's still
a lot about mental health, but we don't talk, I think, enough about how, like, for a lot of people, having good sex is very important to having good mental health, basically.
I always quote that Love Honey survey, but they did this huge, you know, the sexual happiness people, they did this huge well-being survey, and it was a third of people say that sex is vital to to good mental health for them.
Yeah, I definitely think it is for me as well.
Mm. And that you never see it, and I know you've said this, Flo, you never see it on those things on Instagram, you know, how to live well.
Yeah.
Tells you to go jogging, and I'm like, oh, I hate jogging. Love shagging, hate jogging.
In fact, I'd love that. You know, when you go around some people's houses and they have those kind of feel good things on the wall, like live, love, have sex. That's what we need. We need our own range. That's what we need.
Oh my God. Because we want some merch.
We do. That's what we should have.
So, Flo, we want some merch. And Ali had merch before, but it was a key ring.
It was awful.
It was a key ring. Oh, my God. We're going to have little feel-good mantras.
Feel-good mantras to do with
merch.
Sex.
Okay, great.
Can we talk about pubic hair?
Oh.
Yeah, totally.
Where do you... I mean, as a feminist, when we're talking feminist sex, I mean, is there something unfeminist about being hairless down there? Is that pandering to the patriarchy, or is it again do what you want to do and that way you're empowered?
I think, yeah, it's definitely a do what you want to do and that way you're empowered thing, but I think that it's very hard again to know what you do want to do, and it's very hard to separate your own desires and feelings from those that have been conditioned by the patriarchal society that we live in, and like where to separate them, and like how to know, like, exactly, like, am I feeling disgusted by this because it's just not me, or do I feel disgusted by it because I've been told to by Razor adverts? And that's really, really tricky. And I think the only way well, the only way for me to like find out like what how I felt about my own body hair was just to kind of try out growing it out and like see how you feel. And then it's just like a process of trial and error and be like, is this right for me? Is this not? How does my partner feel? How does that make me feel? And all these different things.
When did that happen? When did the Barbie mound become the thing? Do you know
not
what I mean?
Until, like, extremely recently, basically the 90s. Like, late 80s, early 90s, yeah.
And again, is that because of porn?
Porn.
Do you think?
Probably. I think so, yeah. I think, you know, it works better on camera. You can see stuff more easily close up.
Can men have feminist sex, or is this something just for women?
Totally. I mean, for me, like, feminist sex is like a snappy way of just saying, like, having kind of the sex that you want to have and thinking about it and not just being automatic about it, talking about it, you know, asking your partner what they want, listening to them and being, like, flexible and open and experimental and having sex full of joy. And I think regardless of gender, anyone can do that.
And also regardless of age. I love this because I bet this would... this will change as you get as go through different life stages, what you want and what you need. And
yeah.
I guess, but the umbrella thing is just to really evaluate what you want and what you need and communicate that.
Yeah, invest in your sex life and spend time talking and thinking about it is my main bit of advice.
What kind of reaction have you had to the book? Because I think for a while, not saying it was right, but for a while, I think feminism, the word feminism, also almost became a dirty word, didn't it? You know, people kind of had this preconception of what it meant to be a feminist. Have you come up against any negative criticism of the book?
I've had some Twitter trolls who haven't even read it.
Right,
I think
okay.
Everyone who's read it seems to have really liked it and been surprised by it and thought, like, oh, actually, like, you know, a lot of people think it might be for, like, just for children, for like early teens, because
really?
It's got like pictures in it. People are like, oh, give it to my 12-year-old, and I'm like, no. Like, they're gonna have like a very open mind, but maybe your 16-year-old and maybe even you can also like learn something from it.
Wow, I've just got this vision now, Christmas morning somewhere.
Mummy, what's this
in my stocking? Oh, very good pictures of boobs. That's what they'll say, Flo. That's what they'll say. But I do think for a while, feminism had this connotation that it meant you hated men. I just wondered whether, when men read your book or even just hear that you've written this book, do they automatically assume that this is some sort of man-hating tome?
I don't know. I don't think so. I haven't come in contact with men who have said that to my face anyway. I think it's definitely quite intimidating.
Yeah.
Like, oh, what do you do? Oh, I've written a book about feminist sex. It's quite an intimidating chat up line, for sure.
I would say so. Well, listen, thank you so much. And if people want to get hold of the book, they can. And thanks for joining us. Have you got a website that people can take a look at as well, Flo?
FloPerry.com.
Brilliant.
I own that.
I own it.
It's all mine. It's all mine.
Yeah, amazing.
Flo, thank you so much. Appreciate
Thanks, Flo.
It.
Thank you for having me.
Bye.
Cheers, bye.
Bye.
Flo Perry there and her book, How to Have Feminist Sex. She was great, wasn't she?
Love Flo Perry.
I'll tell you who we're going to talk to next.
Ooh.
The lady who campaigned for a long time against Page Three. She lives in Brighton, actually. She's called Lucy Ann Holmes. In fact, she was like one of the founders of the No More Page Three campaign.
Yeah.
And she won, didn't she? Because
there's No More Page Three.
Although, is there or there isn't there? Because sometimes I flick through these papers and you still see images that I would say are slightly suspect. We can talk to Lucy about that anyway. But we don't have the Page Three in the way we used to have it. But she's also written a book, a sexual memoir called Don't Hold My Head Down. Lucy, thanks so much for joining us. Appreciate it. We were just saying, it's a very brave thing to write a sexual memoir. You know, I mean, Bean is my friend and she's just asked me for my number and I won't tell her. And yet you've told the world. Where does that come from? I mean, you know, your family now know what you got up to.
I know. I don't really know what's wrong with me. Yeah, I just don't really have any sort of literary shame. I just let it all pour out. It was quite interesting because there were some moments in the book, and it's a really frank book. I mean, you basically know everything I've ever sort of experienced or thought about sex and masturbation. But there were some moments within that where I'm like, oh, this is feeling really edgy for me to share. And they were quite interesting. But I think also, say, the real reason why I wrote the book is I felt that I sort of set myself up on a bit of to go on a bit of a sexual journey, and it was completely transformative for me. So I basically just wanted to experience better sex, and wrote a list of things I wanted to explore and went off and did them or tried to do them. But I was instantly beset by disaster, and that disaster was me, really. It was me hating my body, like hating my body so much I needed to have drunk a lot of wine in order to show it to anybody. And also I was incapable of asking for what I wanted. So on the one hand, I wanted to explore this pleasure and do all these things, but I couldn't say what I wanted with men. I was a bit like, whatever you want. And I'd just give my power away. And I became quite fascinated and curious about what was going on. So I sort of was beset by disaster, which was quite comedic. But actually, when I went into it and tried to work out why I'd got all these hang-ups, I found it quite revelatory. And it sort of ended up with me learning a lot about myself and learning to actually really accept myself. And then to get, you know, to feel empowered, and to feel empowered to start shaping the sex I wanted to have. And then also that empowerment then led me to going and doing a campaign against Page Three of the Sun. So it felt like quite a big journey to go on for somebody who just really started off wanted to experience some better and different sex.
So it was that way round.
Yeah, so that's what made me want to write the story, because I came from writing fiction. So I'd written four rom-coms, and my agent was saying, oh, let's brainstorm some story ideas. And when you're writing fiction, you're always looking for sort of a tale of adventure that, you know, your heroine will go on and they'll ultimately be changed at the end of it. And this was very, my story was very much felt like this, a story of transformation. And I just really felt, well, if it's been so hugely transformative for me, it might be of interest to other people to read it. So that's kind of why I wrote the story. And I felt that in order to write a book about sex, there's no point in writing a watered down book about female sexuality. You may as well just, be real with it. So, because
you still got to sit around a dinner table, you know, having a Sunday roast with your family, and they
darling.
Do you ever worry when you say, "Could you pass me the gravy?" that they're thinking of chapter three? Yeah. That's the thing that would put me off.
With my mum and dad, they haven't read it. So everyone else in my family has read it. So my sister, my nieces, what have you. But not my mum and dad. And that was quite weird, actually, because my dad's really been really supportive of writing, of all my writing. So when I was writing fiction, he'd really, you know, proofread my novels and help me with plotting. And he really wanted to be involved in this one. And I kept being like, yeah, I'll send it. And then I just was like, listen, Dad, I can't send it to you. And he was like, no, I'm worldly, it's fine. And then at one point he said to me, so I think actually what you're doing is very good. I've looked at some porn, Lucy, and I think you're right. I think you need to be discussing this sort of thing. I was like, oh my God.
I think that's the right call, though, because I don't, you know, no matter how worldly he might say is, you're still this little girl. I just think some things are best shrouded in secrecy.
I think really open writing is... It's part of your process, isn't it? One's process when you really reveal stuff. So you write it and you're like, why am I putting this out there to answer your question? Why on earth am I doing that? And you're often really just compelled to because you need
I have a lot of... So I think some people process things by speaking them, like they'll talk to friends and share their stories and what's going on for them. Whereas for me, I don't really know what I'm thinking about something until I write it. And then I'm like, oh, okay. I think it is my way of processing. Yeah, I think you've hit the nail on the head there.
When you found this power, did this power then mean less sex?
I'm feeling like I'm like Sierra.
You are. This is how I'm picturing you. But when you found that, because I was just saying to Ali, it's like, it's all very well, you know, having this feminist sex and you know what you want. Does that freak people out? Does it mean, is it a litmus test? Does it mean you have less people to have sex with because they're a bit like, well, this is so not what I was around?
No, it was the complete opposite for me, actually, because what had happened before is things tended to be negotiated sexually for me when I was drunk. And I was also, I don't know, something weird was going on where if I look back now at how insecure I was, I must have been quite a nightmare to be with for the opposite sex. And then somehow just doing this journey just meant that I became curious, so I was a lot more open. I just sort of talk about it normally, you know, and so therefore people would come to me and be interested or curious. And I think people then knew from the offset that, you know, I wasn't up for like a drunken quickie, but I might be up for sort of exploring maybe different types of touch, or I really wanted to work out what to do with the penis because I'd had a bit of a penis phobia. And so I was just a bit more honest. And I think actually when you're really honest, then you meet people who see the real you and they can be the real them. And I don't know, something that just made it much more authentic. So I felt that my relationships really expanded, and I was a bit, yeah, blown away by some of the connections I had and some of the people who became interested in me and who, yeah, and what happened. So it was really brilliant. Actually, it became, yeah, quite amazing, actually.
Like a sexual superhero. I've got this image of you now stood with your hand on your hips at the end of the bed and this playing in the background.
Yeah.
You're welcome, Lucy. You need that as Lucy's your mobile
ringtone.
Yeah, that's your new mobile phone.
Every time
ringtone.
I enter a room.
Yeah. She-ra. We've been talking about feminist sex, and we spoke to the author Flo Perry just before you. I think I already know the answer to this question. But are you having feminist sex? Is this what this is?
So interesting, because I haven't read Flo's book. I'm really looking forward to reading it. So I don't know what the actual sort of
It's basically having the sex that you want to have rather than the sex you think you should be having.
That's been dictated by the media and
patriarchy.
It sounds
like you have achieved that.
Yeah, I think so. I think it's really important to know that it's not easy. So, because what I felt is that I felt I'd always been, you know, women's mag has always said, tell him what you want. Tell him what you want. Like, that was easy. And actually, but I'd never see, you know, in porn, no women are saying what they want. And, you know, when you've kind of grown up with, you know, generally a lot of the, you know, the women that you see in relationships often are, it is more patriarchal, the relationships that I looked at growing up and that were around me. So I hadn't really seen women as a norm stating their needs and saying what they wanted. So therefore it became kind of impossible for me to do it. So it took a lot. I mean, it took so much to say, oh, I'm not ready for that. Like, I remember being really fascinated by so much of sex I'd had in, like, my earlier years had, you know, it would start with kissing, and then that kissing would often be moved on by one of two things. And one would be a hand in the pants, and the other one would be my hand being moved onto a penis. And I'd never once thought to say, oh, I do know where your penis is, and I'll get to it when I'm ready. Yeah. I've just been like, oh, no, we're going to move to the penis now.
I'll get to it when I'm ready. Brilliant.
You know, but I just never thought about all this. So actually, it was really clunky at first in order, you know, to say, you know, and quite often I didn't. I just went back to the same formulaic sex and things, and sex being something that was done to me rather than me shaping it and me being, you know, having power in it. It was something that would happen to me. So it took a lot to start saying, oh, could you slow down? Oh, there's no rush. Oh, I love that. Could I have a little bit more of that? That was that's quite revolutionary. Or it took a lot to get in the practice of that. So, yeah, and it's like a muscle that, you know, you kind of exercise, and now I'm a lot better at it. So, yeah, so I'd say now I'm really having some really great sex. And the thing I've just loved most from the journey is just realizing the pleasure I'm capable of. I mean, orgasms that just, to be honest, you know, you go to bed with a man and it's like they orgasm and that's over. And then the woman's just still 15 minutes later, you know, you're still coming. And it's that.
Stop showing off, Lucy.
But we are capable of a lot of pleasure. So, and it does take us, it takes a while to you know, you can't quickly get to that. It takes a little, you know, you put the minutes in earlier and you know, warm up slowly, and then you can, you know, we are capable of unbelievable power pleasure. So yeah, that for me was really exciting. So that's something that I really enjoy now.
And
yeah.
Do you think that take on sex kind of spills over to the rest of your life?
Oh, interesting. Yeah, probably. I would say yes. Yeah, I feel we talk about empowerment so much. And when I did the No More Pasty campaign, people were saying, no, but it's really empowering, and Pasty is really empowering. And it's an interesting thing, isn't it? Because I can understand, how that can be empowering for that woman doing it. But for me, what was really empowering was, and also, you know, we're told as women, you know, to feel sexually empowered, learn to pole dance, you know, go to Ann Summers, and we're told all these weird things. But for me, it was just learning, taking my time to learn about my body and the sensations that I was capable of, and then to learn to lovingly communicate what I wanted, you know, when I was being intimate with someone else. And that for me was empowering, and knowing that and having that. And, you know, we spend so much time thinking about how our body looks, and then also punishing our body. Oh, we've got to exercise, we've got to eat this. Oh, it looks awful. We're kind of in this sort of punishment, you know, relationship often with our bodies. And actually just to sort of sometimes just stop and just go, how am I feeling in my body? And just like, just experiencing that little inner dance of sensation that we have. And it made me really feel loving of my body and kind of in wonder of my body. And it made me kind of make friends with my body. So yes, I think the journey has been, yeah, hugely. And that's had ripple effects in everything, really. I feel like my life has become much more of a magical adventure than it was before, because I was kind of like, you know, keeping myself back, hating myself, keeping myself small. And now I'm, yeah, I feel a lot freer in all ways.
You mentioned
gone on
the...
and on there.
No, I'm loving it.
Shira, you mentioned the No More Page 3 campaign. Just to play devil's advocate a little bit, and you sort of touched on it yourself. I think there will be people who think, if we're saying that feminist sex and to be a feminist is to feel empowered and to be able to make your own choices and to live the life you want to live, then, you know, if there are women who want to pose topless, then why should they be stopped from doing that if that's their choice?
Absolutely. I totally don't think that they should be stopped. But the only issue that we had with the campaign was that where the pictures were, so being put in a family newspaper, actually... sends out if I talk about my journey, that when I was exploring, you know, why do I feel so passive, why is how I look so important, I kept coming up again and again with page three. So I'd been, you know, a child going into sort of, you know, developing older girl, and page three had just been around, and it was just such a big, this is what you're here for, your boobs are there for men to look at. You know, this is your value. Your value lies in being pretty and passive. That's what page three said. So whilst, yes, it's about that woman's choice to do that, absolutely brilliant. But ultimately behind that, it wasn't women who said, you know, who sat around and said, oh, how can we make women feel more empowered and really celebrate their sexualities? Oh, I know, we'll put, you know, teenage boob in the, you know, the biggest selling paper. It wasn't a decision by women. It was a decision by men.
No, men, you know, made the decision? You're kidding me.
70s, you know, from a very different time in the 70s.
Yeah, no, that's what you're saying.
And if we started from a level playing field and it's like, yeah, let's celebrate our beautiful bodies in the paper. Amazing. Let's celebrate sexuality in all its wonderful shapes and sizes and forms. Brilliant. But this wasn't. And it was very limiting. And I felt it very... had a really quite damaging effect on, you know, how I grew up to feel myself as a sexual woman. And because it didn't talk about it said the most important thing about you women is that you're desirable. It never said, what do you desire? And so, big things to unpick. And just actually in a family newspaper, not the place to have that.
No. It is weird. I mean, that was in a paper.
I know, it's hard to get
it's like Newsnight. It's like our gorgeous mate list being topless on Newsnight.
Just be thankful there was never a penis page three. That would have done nothing for your phobia, Lucy, would it? That would have sent you over the edge.
How are you with the penis now? The peni? Is peni the plural?
I'm doing very well, thank you. Yeah, good. I'm a lot better. But I think there's quite a lot of disastrous hand jobs in the book. So I'm not a disastrous hand job.
Will you tell us about the disastrous hand job involving the diesel? Do you know the one I'm talking about? Was you a sex festival, weren't you?
No, this one I'd invite someone round for a lingam massage. So lingam is the tantric word for penis.
Right. Yeah. Oh, a penis massage.
I called it a posh hand job in the book. Yeah, it's like come up.
Ali still invites people over. She's written it down.
I've got to write this down.
Ali still invites people over for a coffee or to look at their look at her etchings.
Yeah, not a lingam massage. Wow. Yeah. Okay. So you invited them over for a lingam massage and
you have to do all this. It's supposed to be really relaxing, and I was just, you know, nervous and going, I'll go a little bit kind of crazy. And anyway, so I'm trying to relax this man, and we're both naked and massage. Anyway, at one point, he just says, apropos of nothing, something about the first transit van he'd ever had, the diesel consumption on that first transit van I had was dreadful. I see, you know, the diesel consumption on that first transit van I had was terrible. Whilst we're both butt naked and I'm trying to, you know, massage him into sexual bliss.
That's what popped into his head. He needs to analyse that, though. According to our previous guest, yeah, he needs to analyse.
That's going
to
open up a whole new world for him.
He might find what really turns him on there, and it might well be diesel transit vans. I don't know. Wow. You have had some adventures. What, I mean, obviously, apart from diesel van.
And you said sex festival.
Yeah. What happened at the sex festival?
Oh, it was amazing, actually. So it was a conscious sexuality festival, and it was 5 days in Dorset, and I was terrified.
Oh, I could do a night. 5 days. I'm not sure.
Yeah, it's a lot, but you get, like, the transgender teachers and conscious sexuality teachers from all around the world doing workshops. So actually, if you want to, yeah, you do have to be quite brave, I suppose, because you're immersed, but it was quite reasonably priced, and you just get to, you know, all these workshops that you can pick and choose from. Some are just women, so some really there's some amazing women teachers in this area. So that was a great way to just experience a lot of different teachings. I loved it, but I was terrified at first. I have to say, I locked myself in the car. I was just going, help, help, to all my friends. I thought I was going to go home, but I didn't. And then, you know, within 24 hours, I was going, oh, I love it. I'm going to come every year.
Literally.
But it's just nice to give your sexuality and your sensuality a bit of space and a little bit of time, and, you know, just focus on it for a little bit. So it's good. And it was really good for me because there's lots and lots of workshops about practicing stating your boundaries, you know. So a lot of these teachers will say it's not safe unless you can say a no and unless you can receive a no. So there's loads of practice with that. So, you know, I'd spent, you know, a lot of time working this out in a disastrous way in the field, if you like, but actually I could have just done it in a nice safe environment, practice saying no to people, and that would have been good. But yeah, I really enjoyed that. I did a couple of sex festival-y type things, and I think people feel like, oh my gosh, that's going to be, I think we have quite a base view of what it could be like, and for me it wasn't. And actually, again and again, I just felt that really exploring my sexuality was actually, rather than being base or shameful or something like this, was actually connecting me to some kind of sense of wonder or some sort of sense of, you know, something, you know, bigger than all of us, some sort of, you know, people talk about, you know, sex as a way of connecting with the divine, and that definitely felt like it. It was like, oh my god, I'm experiencing, you know, stuff that's sort of, you know, psychedelic and transcendent.
Do you still have to camp though?
Yeah, I think you can stay in
Lucy. I'm so sorry. I'm honestly, I don't know why do you talk? It's just offensive.
I just don't know, a sex festival. I mean, I just think, you know, because
I'd need a lot of rescue remedy. I mean, there's got to be easier, smaller, bite-sized things to go to.
I'm gonna dip in and dip out.
Exactly.
Yeah,
that could be the name of the festival.
Dip in and dip out. Yeah, I mean, a good way to start is to think, look at conscious sexuality or tantra, you know, is normally quite a nice way to, you know, you can do sample taster evenings and that. And so that you'll just be doing little exercises with people.
Taster. I love the idea of that. Wow. You mentioned about, you know, a lot of these speakers at this festival were kind of talking about, you know, setting your boundaries and how to have that conversation. Yeah. One thing that Bibi and I were discussing earlier is we think we'd be okay at that bit, kind of saying what we want and what we like and what we don't like.
But don't you dare.
Yeah. We would struggle with the feedback coming back in our direction. Yeah. I don't know how I would feel then if somebody was saying to me, Alison, can you do this better? Can you, you know, I struggle with the appraisals I have here at work.
and they're not always naked.
No.
They're not always naked.
It can be difficult, I think, to receive feedback, no matter how constructive.
Yeah, and I think we always have to, I think we're really sensitive when it comes to sexuality. So we always have to be careful and loving in how we say things. Yeah, I think that goes both ways, you know, because, you know, people are like, I think quite often it's easy to go, oh God, well, I hate it when you do that. Whereas to say, oh, you know what I love it when you do this. It's probably a gentler way of, you know, so I think sometimes we can, yeah.
I'd see through that.
They call that the something sandwich,
yeah,
don't they?
Yeah, I'd see through that, yeah.
But people say, yeah, yeah, the stroke then poke, I like. But people say, you never do that. I think we quite often know you never do that. So an invitation rather than a kind of admonishment is a nice way to do it, really. But again, you know, I think generally we're not that good at it. So it's often about practicing. And sometimes it's really quite eggy in the early stages. But I find that the more you do it, or every time I do it, or I try to do it, I'm rewarded in some way. It feels like the universe is saying, yeah, good on you. Yeah, you know, I've never been put off from trying.
What was the hardest part of the memoir to write? Is there one story, one anecdote, one experience that actually you ummed and ahed about whether to include it or not?
Oh,
and also protecting people.
Yeah, I was really lucky. So some bits I couldn't write because they're not my, there's other people and they weren't, they didn't want me to share that. And that's, I really understood that. Mm. There's one bit, so I kind of go along and talk about love your body, this, that and the other. And then I realise that actually I've got a real phobia about, my anus and actually people touching my anus. And I hadn't had anal sex. And so that was it. And that felt really edgy for me to be talking about. So I've got in this whole I'm feeling really free in this whole book. And then I just hit this oh my God, I hadn't realised. So that was interesting, but then really great to sort of go into that area and explore what was coming up for me there. But in terms of the whole book, really, I have to say, while I was writing it, and it did take me a long time to write it, and I had a baby in that time, and so, my body changed, I changed.
Yeah.
And so I kept having to keep coming back going, do I really want to write this book? Do I really want to tell this story? So at one point I was like, oh, maybe I'll just write it, but I won't ever show it to anybody. But then once I'd finished it, I felt, and I'd kind of gone through all those wobbles, I felt, quite proud and quite, okay, yes, okay, okay with it.
What kind of feedback did you get? Did you get people, that whole thing of, that's exactly how I feel, thank you for writing it, someone's written this?
I've had quite a lot of that, yeah, to be honest. I feel really honoured too that people have, some people have gone on real journeys with it, and shared it, and and I feel that actually there's been a lot this year out about sexuality and female sexuality in particular, and I feel it's really nice to be part of those conversations. So all in all, it's been quite amazing.
And the title of the book, Don't Hold My Head Down, is that because of an experience, more than one experience?
Well, it was really about this. It's such a trope in porn that you don't really see a blowjob without a hand holding the head down. And I just really just felt, if you are essentially, and I know when it happened to me, it was like, if I am giving what is essentially, something pleasurable, I do want to be able to come up for air if I should wish, can we just lose the hand on the head? So it became a bit of a, it became a little bit of a, don't hold my head down, when I was talking to other girlfriends about, some of the things that annoyed me about porn, it would always be that. So it was always called Don't Hold My Head Down, really.
Listen, thank you so much for joining us.
That's
really
so
appreciate
interesting,
it.
Lucy. Thank you.
And obviously, love chatting to you. Thank you for She-Ra.
The book. Oh, shall we?
Oh, one more time.
Shall we? One more.
Only one.
One more time.
I am Adora, He-Man's twin sister.
Oh, He-Man's twin sister. Did you know that?
I'm loving it. You know what I'm going to be doing today?
Yeah, all day.
I'm serious though. You have inspired me. I feel just from chatting to you and Flo, I feel kind
I'll tell
of more
you what,
empowered.
Ali, you I and
feel...
I are writing a book.
You think?
We're the Cagney and Lacey of sex.
Yeah, absolutely.
I love it.
Yes, thank you so much. The book is out now, obviously, but I'm guessing people can follow you on social media as well, find out what you're up to.
They can. I'm quite disappointed on social media, sadly, but yes, I am on Twitter and Instagram and things, and I will try and post something. But yeah, the book's out now, and it comes out in paperback in February.
And as your sexual journey, adventure continues, will there be another book?
I'm actually writing a book. I'm just in the early stages of doing another one, which I've actually been approached to do. So it's not my idea, but I'm really enjoying it. Somebody else's great idea. And I'm interviewing 70 women from all around the world, different ages, faiths, cultures, about what they think about when they're having sex. So what happens and what they think about when they're having sex. Yeah.
Oh.
So spread the word on that and find me if you'd like to be interviewed or if you know somebody who'd be willing to be interviewed.
Oh, Ali wants
gosh.
To do
it. Yeah, well, no, but look, if people do want to get in touch with us here at the radio station and we can pass your details
great.
On.
Thank
to
you.
Lucy.
All the women will be anonymous, so we'd just have an interview and then you'd be anonymous from
so
now.
So you would just have a chat with them. About what they think about, what they fantasize about.
Yeah, it can be fantasies. It's just basically what happens and what they think about.
So, when they're having sex. Yeah. If you want to do that, you can email me in the first instance and I can pass your details on to Lucy. You can get in touch, Alison with two L's ferns@bbc.co.uk. So have you done any of these interviews so far?
I have done some, yes, but I'm in the early stages, yeah.
Is there a trend developing? Is there something that people commonly think about or women commonly think about whilst having sex?
No, it's not one particular trend so far, but I'm early stages. But what has been interesting is that even when people are having, you know, relatively what people might think is good sex and, you know, sort of loving, healthy relationships, there's quite a strand of sadness that comes out. Oh. And I'm curious about that, yeah. So, yeah, I don't know. It's shaping. But different. But there's elements of sadness about even, yeah, wishing they... I don't know. Yeah, it's too early to say. Anyway, and then that might all change because I'm very early stages.
That's
When you've it'd be really interesting to get you back and look at what you found.
Oh, great. Love to, yeah.
Thank you so much, Lucy Ann Holmes. And what an interesting programme it's been.
The sadness thing is interesting because when we talked to Flo, she was just saying that the kind of sex for women is coloured by either trauma or
previous negative experiences.
Negative stuff. And I wonder what age group Lucy had already interviewed. I wonder if that's changing with age groups of different generations.
Yeah. And perhaps as we become more open as a society about sex, maybe that will change and people won't have those kind of hang-ups. Maybe it's the hang-ups that kind of colour it with sadness.
So is it regret? People. Is it not? Oh, I don't know. Would you write a book with me?
What are we going to call it?
Bibi's book.
We need to work on the title and then I'll think
Bibi's
about it.
Bibi's brilliant book.
Didn't tell you, I got an email after last week's show.
Yeah.
Brilliant. It literally just said, if you're not getting enough sex, I would suggest you go to a swingers party. Sent me a link where I could sign up.
Yeah.
And then it just said, I'm loving it and I'm retired. That was all it said. That was literally it. That was the email. It's like, oh. But thank you to that person.
So what are you going
to
wear?
Oh, yeah, no, it's unbooked. I'm not. No, gosh, no, come on, no. Anyway, good night.
Good night.